Good afternoon. This is KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery, and thank you for listening. There's been a lot of speculation that Governor Mike Dunleavy might leave his job for a role in the Trump administration. Now he says he's staying. Dunleavy told conservative talk radio host Mike Beccaro yesterday that he plans to serve out his second term.
Yes, Mike, I'm staying for the next 2 years. I know there has been some talk, but the president and I have not had a discussion about a job. I really enjoy the job I have, and I look forward to helping Alaskans over the next 2 years.
Dunleavy was seen as a possible candidate to head the Interior or Energy Department under Trump. In an interview just after Trump's election, Dunleavy said he was open to talking with Trump about roles in the administration. He even outlined some priorities that an Interior Secretary might address, like lifting restrictions on development in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, and the Tongass National Forest. But Trump ultimately went with North Dakota Governor Doug Berman for Interior and fracking company executive Chris Wright to lead the Energy Department. Trump finished naming the heads of the 15 federal executive departments over the weekend. During the interview with Beccaro, Dunleavy said he was excited for what Trump's return to the White House would mean for Alaska.
Quite honestly, the next 4 years, I think, are going to be some of the most interesting this country will ever experience, and I'm very optimistic.
Dunleavy's second and final term as governor ends in 2026. And the Alaska Supreme Court will have a new Chief Justice early next year. Justice Susan Carney will replace outgoing Chief Justice Peter Mawson when he retires in mid-January. Carney will be the longest-serving justice on the bench when Mawson retires. State judges in Alaska face mandatory retirement when they reach age 70. Mawson will retire on January 13th, one day short of his 70th birthday. In the remote southeast Alaska village of Angoon, high school students are learning how to grow their own produce using hydroponic technology. As KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, the classroom facility gives students a hands-on learning experience and increases food sovereignty in a community of about 300, where fresh vegetables are hard to come by.
In one classroom at Angoon High School, the desks and whiteboards you might expect to see are missing. Instead, there are vines suspended from the ceiling and foliage peeking out from tall white towers that look like they belong on a spaceship. The room is humid and the plants bask in warm yellow light. High schoolers have spent the past few years building a mini farm inside this ordinary classroom. And they say the food they grow here is better than anything else they can get in town.
It tastes better.
That's Cody Pitka, a junior at the high school. He tended to the plants all summer long and continues to check in on them throughout the school year.
It means a lot to me, and like just being able to come here and help with the community and trying to get other people to come in and help.
Angoon is on Admiralty Island, where it rains constantly and sunshine is a rarity in the winter. Most of the food in the village is flown in or brought in on a barge. And a lot of residents rely on traditional harvesting to fill their freezers. But climate change is disrupting land and water, making some subsistence food less abundant and harder to find. This facility is a way for the students and community to have more control over the food that they eat. Lisa Kukesh Booth is also a junior. She says growing food here allows her to provide for her community in a brand new way.
Because we know where it came from and how we grew it and how we processed it.
Things that are usually hard to grow in southeast Alaska, like peppers, tomatoes, basil, and lettuce, are abundant in the classroom. That's because of the hydroponic facility's technology, which allows vegetables to grow year-round. There are boxes and pods where the plants suck up nutrient-rich water and grow under LED lamps. The facility was paid for using a federal education grant. Its purpose is to teach students the basics of cultivation and food sustainability. The result of those lessons is the fresh produce they share with their community. Frank Conrad is a counselor at the school and helped develop the program 3 years ago.
It's not just the hydroponics as a means of getting the food, but also it's giving the kids a feeling of empowerment.
Conrad says before the program, fresh vegetables were hard to come by in the village. Now students can enjoy the produce every day. And once students get their share of the harvest, the rest goes to elders and anyone else in the community who wants some. It's all free. Pitka says that's his favorite part.
Being able to help the community out with vegetables, like fresh vegetables, but they know where it came from.
Now, the small classroom-sized facility can't support the entire village, And startup costs for hydroponic farms can be expensive, especially for remote villages like Angoon. But Conrad says the small classroom facility is a first step toward a bigger goal of food sovereignty.
To have fresh vegetables is just so important, and for healthy living, well-being, and the kids are also feeling really good about themselves, you know, because they're growing it.
Conrad says right now, students can get involved by taking the program as an extracurricular or when it's integrated into other classes. But next semester, they plan to start a class solely dedicated to teaching students the basics of hydroponics and food sovereignty. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And many Southeast Alaska residents rely on diesel heating oil, like Toyo stoves, to keep warm in the winter. But a new program will fund the switch to electric heat pumps, potentially saving homeowners thousands of dollars a year. The local government in Ketchikan made a move this week to help that process along. KRBD's Michael Finelli has more.
Andy Romanoff directs Alaska Heat Smart, a Juneau-based nonprofit that helps Alaskans reduce their heating costs, often through the conversion to heat pumps.
Most people come to us and they don't really care to know how a heat pump works or what is a heat pump, but they have heard about them and they ask, what's it going to cost me? What's it going to save me?
For homeowners in Southeast who use entirely oil-based heat, Romanoff says switching to heat pumps could shave off 75% of their bill. Part of the reason the savings are so dramatic is that many Southeast communities use hydropower for electricity, which is much more affordable than other sources. The catch is that heat pumps can be expensive, costing several thousand dollars or more to install. But thanks to a $38 million federal grant Alaska Heat Smart won over the summer, that installation cost may be mostly or entirely covered for local residents. To help facilitate that process, the Ketchikan Borough on Monday approved an agreement with the city to support a part-time Heat Smart home energy advisor in Ketchikan. Romanoff says the new advisor's job will be to conduct assessments and provide information to homeowners to help them make decisions. He says every home is a little different.
How much heat does your home actually need on the coldest day of the year to stay warm? What potential issues exist in your home regarding heat, regarding power? And what are your options as a homeowner to provide that heat in a clean, efficient, and money-saving way?
Residents in Ketchikan and throughout coastal Alaska who switch to heat pumps could receive a direct, upfront financial incentive up to $8,500, potentially covering the full cost of the install. The amount of the incentive varies by income level, but even higher income residents can get about half that amount. And Romanoff says there's other local and national incentives to help bring down the cost. Whatever you might have to pay up front, Romanoff says the savings happen quickly.
The average home that installs a single head, one head air source heat pump saves about $1,500 a year. We have some homes saving up to $3,000 a year. With maybe a two-head heat pump system.
For Southeast towns with hydropower, that also means that the heating system becomes fully renewable, slashing the emissions of burning oil, which is one of the primary contributors of human-caused climate change. Even if you're not concerned with the health of the planet, getting rid of oil heaters will also improve the health of your home. Romanoff says after putting in his heat pump, house guests started noticing that it no longer smelled like diesel.
And I never even knew it did because I was just used to it. They've got all that backdrafting of monitor stoves and Toyo stoves into the homes.
Romanoff says they hope to have the home energy assessor on the ground within the next month or two and to begin funding installations by next spring. They've already started doing some simpler assessments in Ketchikan virtually. You can apply for your own home assessment online at akheatsmart.org. In Ketchikan, I'm Michael Finelli.
And you're listening to Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Earlier this month, we heard from master carver Wayne Price and his apprentice Skyde'u Jules, who are working on a dugout canoe, or yak, in Juneau for Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. Today, we hear from another apprentice. Moira Johnson-Sidney shares how carving has added stability to her life during a tumultuous time.
My name is Moira Johnson-Sidney. I'm a volunteer apprentice carver. This is my first time working on a dugout. My father's clan is Kagwantan. My family's from Yakutat and like Klukwan area. My Tlingit nickname is Gooch Yedi. Well, this project in general, it came into my life at a very delicate time, I guess. So it's been kind of a stabilizer for me. I've lost a lot of family this year, you know, lost a lot to alcoholism, you know, different types of addictions. I've had a lot of issues on my own. And so this carving project, it's really put things into perspective, I guess. And it's definitely, like, kind of helped me put myself back together, I guess. But yeah, it's been really, really special to me. You know, there's, like, not to get cheesy, I guess, but, you know, some people, they start going to church, or, like, you know, they find God, or they make art, or they make stories, you know, and some people make boats, I guess, just different things to kind of patch up their, you know, smaller parts of their damaged, like, you know, damaged selves. But I'm from Yakutat. My family is from Yakutat. They have cultural things here and there. They're in a celebration. They have the Tlingit language in the schools. But they don't have boats. So I want to bring dugouts back home. And I definitely have a lot of family that could benefit from it. Younger, you know, cousins who are younger than I am, who struggle with, you know, alcohol. It starts when you're, like, you know, 11, 12, 13. But carving kind of found me. I mean, well, Gold Belt kind of kept me in the carving realm ever since I was, like, 15, basically. You know, I kind of veer off and get distracted by different things that aren't really as important. And they always kind of find me and bring me back.
That was Moira Johnson-Sidney on how yak carving has helped her find purpose and direction. She's part of a group of apprentices working with master carver Wayne Price to carve a dugout canoe in Juneau. And this is KTOO.